take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your dip from my live, I don't rate you, of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Okay, so before we really get deep in the Grammys Popcast, I don't want to say I'm Team Bruno, but I'm not opposed to Bruno Mars. It's important to say that right up front. Bruno Mars won the three big cross-genre categories. He won, last night, he won Album of the Year, he won Record of the Year, and he won Song of the Year. And I think if you are a person who is a mix engineer or perhaps a songwriter or someone who grew up with 1990s R&B, that is a completely satisfying outcome for the 60th annual Grammy Awards.
Completely satisfying?
Fairly satisfying. One of, a satisfying option.
Before we complain, why don't you introduce us all, John?
Joe just out here.
Sorry. You said completely
there
satisfying.
There was a lot of ifs. It's caveat AF.
Okay.
However, as in recent years, the victories in the main Grammy categories underscore some significant problems with the voting blocks of the Grammys and the Grammys' persistent struggle to recognize hip-hop, to recognize black artists. It's a constant struggle. What you are now seeing, and certainly in back-to-back years, are the big categories being won by non-black artists performing the music black Americans. So the Grammys are back. We all spent a lot of time. I'm surrounded by the entire gang. Karen Gans, pop music editor, slept maybe around the same amount that I did last night. So we're both maybe a little punchy today.
I'm going to go with 2.5 hours, John.
Okay. Pop music reporter, Joe Coscarelli. Mm-hmm. Already teeth out, yeah, ready to go.
I'm ready.
Music business reporter, Ben Cesario.
Hello.
Chief pop music critic, John Frelis.
Here still.
Yes, right. We're still in the Grammys. About 12 to 14 hours have passed, or maybe 16 since the conclusion of the Grammys. We are still living in the Grammys.
Karen, next year we're going to crash in the office.
That's fine. I'll totally
in those
do that.
Lovely new mustard yellow, yes, hybrid couch diner things.
Exactly.
That sounds great.
There were several moments where we could have gone fetal.
Last night.
Yeah. And you wouldn't have missed anything.
Fetal into feral. That's how the Grammys make me feel. Okay, let's talk about the big categories. I feel like there are a lot of things that the Grammys brought up this year that are not pegged to the category victories or the category losses. But let's start with Bruno sweeping, Kendrick winning all the rap categories, but getting shut out of the main categories, Jay getting shut out altogether. Jay-Z nominated 8 times for 444 and various singles associated with it. Tacombe, no victories, but was wearing what I thought for Jay was a really great outfit. He had a great turtleneck, nice jacket, super well cut. So shouts to Jay-Z's stylist.
Hair looked good.
Yeah, shouts to whoever was working the look, you get a raise. JP, what was your takeaway from Bruno's sweep?
Well, it's exactly what the Grammys always do. They pick the most old-fashioned thing they can find on the menu.
Even if old-fashioned just means 1992.
That's a long time back, though.
That's true.
And
that's true.
The Grammys are singularly bad at rewarding originality.
Mm-hmm.
They will give you your award for originality 20 years later.
Sure.
And so
Jay will
Steely
win
Dan,
in like 2025.
You know, and Steely Dan and Beck.
The young version of you in 20 years could be like, Jay-Z.
This guy.
So
this
old.
This guy. I hope to be the young version of me in 20 years.
But that's FYI. Assuming Jay-Z ever goes to a Grammy ceremony.
Good point.
But I used to have a rule of thumb about the Grammys, which is that the album with the oldest song on it wins. It was like the Joni Mitchell remix by Herbie Hancock.
Oh, sure.
That was the Norah Jones album with the Hank Williams song on
right.
it.
Right.
It worked every time. Mm-hmm. So
and
this
for this
time,
one, you can count 24 Karat Magic and whatever songwriters he had to credit for taking that groove.
Right. I mean, this album is a Michael Jackson, Teddy Riley, New Jack Swing album, basically. Okay, we understand that we at the Grammys, we graybearded 17,000 credits as assistant mix engineer.
Right.
We understand this.
So wait, but is that a form of progress that at least when it comes to nostalgia, we've like somehow wrested control, jerked it out of the 60s and 70s and taken it into the early 90s?
Well, yeah,
the
thing, it's a slight advance.
It's not,
slight
is
advance.
That not nothing?
The thing I think works for Bruno Mars and the Grammys in that if Ed Sheeran would have been nominated in the top three categories and swept them, like could have happened if he would have been in there, I think that would have been more Adele-ish to me than what happened this year. Even though, you know, this was Ed's sort of pop album and, you know, whatever. That aside, Bruno sort of splits the difference between, like, Grammy, capital P, performer, and someone with a little edge, right? Like, because the music
very
he's referencing, the very tiny bit. But, you know, he people like him. Like, young people do like Bruno Mars. His songs are popular. He dances well. He has trap drums, you know, on this album every now and then. But then he's also like, say, for your grandmother. He's like, you know, Bruno Mars, this is the best, he's the best wedding band in the world.
Yeah, and also like sort of curiously anonymous. This there's this sort of issue with Bruno. He's not as much of a public personality.
Since his arrest for cocaine, they
pretty
very much.
Early on.
Very early on in his career.
Post mugshot,
And yeah, he disappeared after that.
Well, he's the middle of the road of this year. Mm-hmm. But maybe if Bruno Mars is the middle of the road, then it's not so bad.
Right.
Like the middle of the road could have been
Ed Sheeran.
Hey!
But it also could have, it could have been a like really old-fashioned record.
Has the Recording Academy been nudged enough to the point where they will not make the mistake of like giving no shots to Herbie Hancock, but a Herbie Hancock, the album of the year?
That's like, been part of what's been going on there. Yeah.
So that's talk to us a little bit about some of the changes that the Recording Academy has been trying to implement in recent years to kind of avoid the WTF moments like that.
They have a system where for—
Shouts to jazz, though. Shouts to jazz.
Yeah. They now have a system where they have committees that review the nominations as they come in from voters.
Right.
And so the vote, like if you're a Grammy voter, you get a computer file with like thousands of names on it for record of the year. And it kind of used to be that whatever was the top five got on the ballot, and sometimes there'd be embarrassing stuff on there. And now they have kind of star chamber committees that review that and try to remove anything that truly doesn't fit. There's a hand that guides it. They've talked about this. They don't like to go into too much detail about that side of it, and the committees are supposed to be secret. But they say that they do guide that process. And
especially
Ed Sheeran,
in the top categories,
yes,
right?
Yes, especially, yeah. And Ed Sheeran, when the nominations came out back in November, that was definitely one of those things that everybody said, like, I see the hand of the committee on this.
And you think that was done basically to avoid an Adele moment?
I think so.
That's definitely a theory that's out there.
Yeah. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, if you'd like to dox.
I think it's
the best
theory that I've seen for why Ed Sheeran was kept out of the top categories. And it was interesting to see last night, Ed didn't show up. He didn't deign to perform on the show. He wasn't going to give them ratings after they snubbed him pretty hard. And then he wins anyway.
A pop solo performance
or
something?
Yeah, and just, you know, didn't show up. So I don't, we, Karen
but
and
would
I
that,
were...
Would that category have been on the show if Ed Sheeran wasn't going to win?
Right, well, yeah, well,
I think so.
Karen and I were debating whether or not that was like a Ed, please come back to us moment that they were holding up the boombox saying, we miss you.
And these kind of invisible hands, these steering committees, this is true not just in the main categories, but it's also true in the genre categories.
Some of them. I have to say I don't know all of it. And
there's
a lot of categories.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely in hip-hop, like, there's definitely a subcommittee. You know, there is some loose speculation that, you know, like Rhapsody, who was nominated for a couple of Grammys this year, but I believe is also either produced by or managed by Ninth Wonder, who is in charge.
He was outed by Q-Tip.
Yeah, Q-Tip. When Q-Tip went on his little jazz-accompanied rant on Instagram around the nomination time, he Q-Tip said, "I see you, Ninth Wonder."
I mean,
and I see, and but then again, Rhapsody was the only woman nominated, so that's like, you know, they needed that because there weren't that many major label rap albums by women last year.
Right. Or in any year.
Or in any year.
Right. I mean, that's like just FYI. You could say that about 1996 or 2007 or any year between now and the beginning of rap. Okay. One of the things that I struggle with, and I wrote a piece about this, and maybe what we should play now is the Cardi B portion of the Bruno Mars performance. Maybe a little bit of that and then a little bit of the Bartier Cardi sort of weird Judgment Night mashup at the end of that performance. Red bottom MJ, moonwalk on the bitch, moonwalking through your clique, moonwalking in the six, 50 with the kick, moonwalks in this bitch. Red bottom MJ, moonwalk on the bitch, moonwalking through your clique, moonwalking in the six, 50 with the kick. Girl, you know we got it. Yeah, we got it going on, got it going on. But it feels so good to be us. Yeah, we got it going on, got it going on. Okay, so the Grammys serves two purposes, right? It's an award show to honor the finest that the music industry has to offer in the eyes of songwriters and sound engineers. And it is also a televised concert. It is also meant to keep people's attention for 3+ hours. And I am consistently struck by what is not on the Grammys. And obviously, I come with a certain set of genre preferences and biases, but I also come with a decent amount of common sense. And I definitely,
sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I definitely so that don't need to see. I don't need to see Sting 3 times on the Grammy Awards in 2018. I don't need to see Bono 3 times on the Grammy Awards in 2018. And I'm blown away by the fact that this is the second year running that this has happened. The way that streaming gets calculated in the Billboard charts has created any number of once viral, then official rap hits. None of which, and we're going from Designer's Panda all the way up to Post Malone and 21 Savage Rockstar, none of them appear on the Grammys in any way. And you can tell me any kind of narrative that you want to tell me about that, but if you don't see racism in there and you don't see a kind of reverse ageism where it's like y'all aren't ready, I don't know what to tell you. If you're supposed to be actually, honestly reflecting what's happening in the pop music business.
Wait, slow down.
It could just be cluelessness. I mean, it doesn't have to be racism.
Do they not have a Billboard subscription? Do I have to pay for Ken Ehrlich's Billboard subscription?
John.
Yo, Ken Ehrlich, drop a pin, send me your address. I will get you a Billboard subscription, my guy. Or just email, John. I get you digital only.
This is
Karen,
the thing.
Can I expense?
I was just like, I sense an expense question.
Karen, can I expense a Billboard subscription for Ken Ehrlich?
I think we all care about the wellness of the Grammys, but I feel like John Perlis has something to say.
Yeah, yes. I just want to point
out.
Is that
out, a yes?
No, that's a no.
Oh, come on. A GoFundMe for Ken Ehrlich's Billboard subscription. Hit me on DMs.
There you go. I just want to point out that the Grammys were always a reaction against the now. They started in 1958 giving awards to Frank Sinatra albums.
Right.
When Chuck Berry was around. They were always the rear guard, the retrenchment, the like, you kids are making horrible noise. Historically, from the start to now.
What a horrible principle upon which to found the marquee event of
the
music business.
But that's the explanation.
But here's another thing. Like, okay, so I grew up knowing that the Grammys were that, you described. But I think the disappointment has been ratcheted up in recent years, especially this year, because with the nominations, there was some indication that they seemed to be wanting to catch up and play in the conversation.
No white man was nominated for Album of the Year.
Right, which
first
is...
First time ever, or Best New Artist.
Yeah. And, you know, so there were these indications that maybe we were approaching, you know, a sort of a meeting in the middle between the traditional Grammys and the way pop music exists today.
But then nominations went to the general population of Grammy voters.
Exactly.
But
not even that, just thinking about the show itself. So they have the biggest toolbox of any televised music event. Basically, they can take anyone they want and sort of arrange them in constellations as they see fit. Mm-hmm. And they consistently make the most conservative, safe, boring choices. For instance,
I don't know if it's even safe. I mean, how could you have old Anglo guys, Bono, Sting, Elton John, be your representation of rock and roll in 2017? It's like, that's not even common sense anymore.
Yeah. Can I just quote our colleague, Joe, and I bumped into Brent Staples, who is on the New York Times editorial board. We bumped into him about 20 minutes ago, and Brent Staples came with the fire take, which was, that's not even cool for white people.
White people don't really want to see this.
Care about Bono and Sting. And I was like, that's the hottest take I've heard. That's actually better than any take that I've read or written.
Right. But I'm saying, when you have the option of Cardi B and Migos, who are nominated, and Lil Uzi Vert, who's nominated, Lorde, who didn't perform, you know, you have, and you have Rihanna, and you put her with DJ Khaled and Bryson Tiller. Mm. Okay, that's fine. But you could have put Rihanna and Kendrick together.
Yes.
And you would have had two of the best performers of the night creating that moment.
But and instead, a Grammy-winning song.
Right. But instead, you separate them.
Yeah,
and you put Cardi B with a pop star instead of giving rap even one moment. You could put all the rappers together. It would be better than
100%. You could have done a Black Beatles Bad and Bougie thing. You could have done a Motorsport Bad and Bougie thing. Like, there's any number of approaches. And I understand it's like, we all want to say, well, they're old and they're out of touch. But like, okay, if you're not going to let me buy Ken Ehrlich a Billboard subscription, you know how the Times has that thing where you could sponsor a subscription for a student? Can we sponsor subscriptions for Grammy voters? Just so they can at least look at the chart and be aware of what's on it. It is mind-bending that here we are in 2018 and the institutional resistance to hip-hop, which is the dominant actual genre in terms of numbers and the dominant cultural and, like, psychical genre for decades now, remains so far removed from this thing. And the other thing that we're seeing, in addition to, oh, well, the nominees seemed better this year, so we hoped that the outcomes would be better— the Grammys are no longer the only game in town. And that's not to say there's some secondary award show that people want to win as badly as Grammys. But if you're mad about the Grammys, you can just go on Twitter and be like, I'm mad about the Grammys. I'm not going, and get as much attention as if you win an actual Grammy, maybe more. I think Kanye West does more for his career by not going to the Grammys.
By eating in Berlin alone.
Yes. Although apparently that was from the day before.
But still.
Still. Phenomenal. Great.
But I don't think it's that they've never seen Billboard. It's a choice. I mean, they know who Uzi is, you know? They know.
A choice embedded in structural racism.
Okay.
And reverse ageism.
You said it.
I did.
What's a more generous explanation for making that choice?
Extreme conservatism about what to put on television. That you're looking at Billboard magazine and you're seeing Khalid and you're seeing Lorde and you're thinking, like, I'm not so sure about this new thing that's happening in music, which has been going on for 20 years. So, like, let me check my Rolodex. Bono's there, Sting's there, Elton John is there. There's a I don't know. It's almost like a comfort in reaching for those older
figures. Where's my guy Bono pulling someone aside and being like, hey, man, you know, like, maybe I don't need to be on the show three times. Like, why don't you use five of those minutes and get some of these kids
some shots? That doesn't seem like a Bono thing to do.
Yeah. Sting?
Not only that, do you recall a recent interview with Jan Wenner and Bono where Bono said that recent rock and roll is weak and girly?
Yeah, he did.
Bono might not be the most plugged in man right now.
Ben, what you're talking about is conservatism. That's why I think the opening number by Kendrick Lamar was so jarring to see, and then cutting to Chappelle and him saying, this is CBS, like that, you know, that was like really like probably the sharpest moment of the night, and it happened in the first 3 minutes, you know.
By 7:37, it was over.
And to set that up, I mean, the juxtaposition between seeing, you know, that 6.5 minutes of Kendrick Lamar just like blowing people's faces off, and then to go into Gaga doing Joanne for the 12th award show in a row. That's just, you know,
at the slowest tempo that she could muster.
Yeah.
It makes the game time
heavy. Yeah. The wings were heavy. She moved slowly.
So, it was, you get a flash. That's just like the nominations. You know, you get a flash of like, you see the potential in this show, and then automatically you're brought back down to earth.
Well, the ratings came out this morning and they were terrible. The Grammys lost 24%. They're down about 10 million.
Under 20 million.
Yeah. Very, very bad. And
I would be curious to see the age breakdown on those ratings, too.
Can I ask a question? Like, I don't know much about what makes for good ratings on a Grammys telecast and what makes for bad ratings. So, like, why do we think ratings were bad? I don't think they were bad for the reasons that I think the Grammys are bad. I'm sure they're bad for some other reason. But what is that other reason?
I wonder if one of the reasons is that people might have tuned in. People might have tuned in and seen that opening segment and turned it off.
And pieced out?
Really? And you, so wow. You think that will...
That's a guess.
They were like, not my Grammys? Like, yeah.
I mean, if that was the most provocative moment on the Grammys, right. You know, it may have split the audience.
And that could discourage them from doing things like that in the future.
Let's listen to a little bit of this sort of like roiling Kendrick Lamar performance, which really should watch the video of, because there's just a lot happening. It's like, there's either just him and a drummer on stage or like him and like 40 military dancers on stage. But here's 30 seconds of Controlled Chaos.
I'm Dave Chappelle. And I just wanted to remind the audience that the only thing more frightening than watching a black man be honest in America is being an honest black man in America. Sorry for the interruption. Please continue.
More got bitchy, damn. Top off, getting topped off in the city. Big top dog, and I dance on him like Diddy. Pop off, and I pop back like 50. Damn. I gotta dance. I'm Millie Rock when I get that advance. How can I shout with like 64 M's? Talking the top of our business again. He wants some lap with new Bentleys again. I want some top from like 2 cents of twins. Put it twin, yeah, yeah. Red light, green light, red light, green light, red light, green light, they like, we like fast car. Fast money, fast life, fast bras, egotistic, going ballistic. My God, born warrior, looking for euphoria. But I don't see it, I don't feel it, I'm paraplegic. Tap in when I'm actually a countdown with the back tears and a pump in the background. I've seen never OG.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not-so-small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
My name is Thomas Gibbons-Neff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
What amazing irony that the conservative show puts 6 minutes of something provocative on and risks losing the audience that they designed the entire 3 hour plus rest of the show to avoid losing.
That brings us another theory, you know, is that last year, the ratings were good and surprisingly good, right? I think they even gained a little bit. But last year you had a contest between Adele and Beyonce. That's the headline bout. And then you look at this year's show, and this is something I know all of us have been talking about for weeks. Mm-hmm. You're missing a lot of stars. You're missing nominated stars. You're missing Justin Bieber, who didn't show up to do Despacito. You're missing Taylor Swift. Kanye West, as we say, doesn't participate anymore. Drake wants nothing to do with this award show. Mm-hmm. Even going down the list, Miranda Lambert, you know, Ed Sheeran, like all of these people just are not participating.
Jay declined to participate. Like if they had a TV spot that said, and a historic performance by Jay-Z.
Career-spanning performance.
You know, that might have
brought
people in.
Give him 12 minutes. I mean, like, you could basically just give Jay 12 minutes to do 5 to 6 songs from his career.
Maybe they said no, thank you. Maybe they said, Jay, do whatever the heck you want, and he just said no.
And I think I said this to you, Ben, but I think, Jay might have been in the mode of, you know, I'll show up and you can award me, but I'm not going to give you anything after the way you've treated me, my colleagues, and my wife for
And I think
years.
He played
my wife, which is Blue Ivy.
He played that hand correctly.
Right. And which is, yeah, and then he goes 0 for 8. And they have a ton of Grammys, don't get me wrong, but they're all in genre categories. Yeah. They're all relegated to the usually the pre-show.
And also, it's worth it just to jump off on something you were saying a minute ago. The stars who are the multi-nominated stars this year are kind of low-key as stars go. Jay-Z is here with like an intimate confessional. I mean, it's Jay-Z,
but it has
it's
no
like
hits.
It's a quiet album with no real radio hits. Kendrick Lamar is an artist who is dense and complex, who has a real sense of showmanship, but is not necessarily anybody's idea of a celebrity in the traditional celebrity sense.
SZA,
who is just not well known, at least, you know, I saw some people on Twitter talking about they didn't know how to pronounce her name last night. Shame on y'all, but he's just not that well known. And so it was a slow year, so maybe some of that is what's happening. Speaking of people who we thought could have a big night but had a quiet night, Lorde very gamely sat through, I believe the whole broadcast. She was nominated for Album of the Year, did not win Album of the Year, apparently was not invited to perform. Ken Ehrlich basically was like, baskets full. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, she was offered performance slots, but not a chance to perform her own song from her nominated album.
Which made her the only Album of the Year nominee to have a slot for herself.
And which also makes no sense because she's a great performer. And you know she would do something weird and wonderful.
What I wish, you know, what I was thinking about this morning is, remember when she did Writer in the Dark a cappella at Bowery Ballroom when her album came out?
Yes.
I feel like if she would have done that on the Grammys performance, I don't know how it would have done for the ratings, but I think it would have brought the house down.
And even when she performed, what was the show when she had broken her wrist?
It was the VMAs. Yeah.
And like kind of turned that into a special moment?
I think she had the flu or something. She couldn't sing, so
she did
danced.
Interpretive dance. But then there was a Billboard Award performance that she did on this album cycle where she karaoke to Greenlight, which was amazing. I mean,
she's imaginative.
She knows what she's
2 days before
at
the Grammys, she sang at the Music Cares event, which is their charity thing. It's a tribute to Fleetwood Mac.
She did Silver Spring.
She did a nugget. Yeah, it was the B-side, I think.
Yeah.
Silver Springs, totally stunning. Totally stunning. I mean, you know, that's one of those events where like half the crowd is chit-chatting, but the room was silent when she sang.
And again, I don't want to sort of like belabor the point, but like how do you justify it? Two separate moments where I had to watch Sting and Shaggy on stage or on the screen at the same time, and then Lorde is literally in the audience clutching a flask with a Jenny Holzer poem stitched in her dress. I mean, to be fair, a much better look probably than performing on the Grammys. But how do you justify that? How does any sensible person justify that?
Well, I was watching the reaction shots as Album of the Year was announced, and I hope there is a gif of Lorde who is nodding knowingly as they announced that Bruno Mars has the Album of the Year. Mm-hmm. I want to see that gif online, please.
Send that.
We'll find it after the podcast. I think this Lorde thing going into the show sort of set a weird tone as people started to realize that she wasn't going to be really a part of the show. I mean, it was also strange that she was only nominated in one category, which was the top category. And then, you know, it turns out as we go through these 3 hours that only one woman accepted an award on the show, 9 awards, which were given Alessia Cara for Best New Artist, and, you know...
Which people were upset about, too.
Yeah.
I like Alessia Cara.
No shots at Alessia Cara. Yeah. She had an emotional Instagram post today because she feels like she was getting some backlash, but...
Shouts to Alessia Cara.
A few days before the Grammys, a report came out about women's representation in the music industry and in the Grammys specifically, and I believe the number was 9.3% of the last 900 Grammy nominees have been women. It's a very tiny number. This sort of led to a little dust up after the show and on the internet today. Ben, do you want to take us through that?
Well, in the press room backstage after the show, Neil Portnow, the president of the Recording Academy, came and answered questions, and someone asked, you know, what about this, you know, the fact that only one woman won an award tonight? I can't remember whether they asked about the rest of, you know, the women winners. But one of the things he said is that women in the industry need to step up. He went on to say more reasonable things.
Can we all just pause to heavy sigh?
That was the quote.
Sigh?
And, you know, this is the president of the Recording Academy, you know, the music industry's central award institution. This is a guy who, you know, he knows his quotes are going to get out there.
And to be fair, he was not referring to the excellent Step Up series of films, right. Just for what it's worth, because that maybe would have been
early Channing Tatum.
Yes, that would have been acceptable, perhaps.
So, you know, last year, Grammys So White became a hashtag following the Oscars. And this year, Grammys So Male is trying to be a hashtag. And I think that with the Me Too movement and the report that came out right before the Grammys, I think it's put a lot of attention, rightfully and painfully, on this topic of how women are treated on this award and in the music industry.
And the fact that they leaned so hard on Me Too and Kesha, namely, as the sort of emotional core of this show.
And you said that I was done. Well, you were wrong, and now the best is yet to come. 'Cause I can make it on my own. Oh, I don't need you. I found the strength I've never known. 'Cause I'll bring thunder, I'll bring rain. Whoa. And when I'm finished, they won't even know your name. You brought the flames and you put me through hell. I had to learn how to fight for myself. And we both know all the truth I can tell. I'll just say this as I wish you farewell. I hope you're somewhere praying, praying. I hope your soul is changing, changing. I hope you find your peace.
So this was Kesha on stage, joined by Camila Cabello, Andra Day, Cyndi Lauper,
Julia Michaels,
and
many other
background choir. Everybody dressed in all white. Incredibly emotional performance from Kesha, but also carrying the burden of the entire narrative. I sort of felt like that the Grammys sort of said anything has to do with the mistreatment of women, be it sexual harassment, pay equity, lack of, like, everything is getting thrown into these 5 minutes. It's sort of how it felt.
And we're going to be done with it in 5 minutes.
Yes. Sort of we don't want it to sort
and
of
we're
like
going to be done with it in 5 minutes.
Show.
Karen, did you feel like it worked?
I had feelings about all this.
Go in.
I felt for Kesha because I really felt like she was using this opportunity to sort of, like, make her peace with the industry, you know, sort of face down. There was one point where she was making, like, very intense eye contact with the camera, and I was like, it's like she's trying to look directly at Dr. Luke.
It was a good full circle moment.
Yeah, do we want 2 seconds of background on why Kesha had this burden, or have we covered this in previous podcasts?
I feel like most people know, but basically Kesha sued her producer, Dr. Luke, to get out of her contract, saying that he had abused her physically and verbally for many years. That case got tied up in court. Kesha was ultimately not freed from her contracts, but she was able to release an album, even though it was on Dr. Luke's label.
Yes.
Dr. Luke, I assume, was not at the Grammys last night. I'm just going to assume.
And obviously, you know, he's denied the charges and continues to pursue legal action against Kesha for defamation and breach of contract.
And while Kesha's album, Rainbow, that the song Praying is off of, did come out last year, you know, this whole battle started in 2014. It just doesn't feel like the most au courant way to address something. You know, the Times published our Harvey Weinstein story October 5th. The Grammy nominations came out November 28th. There's plenty of time in here for the show to come up with some sort of woman-centric plan other than make poor Kesha carry the burden of this issue for
and
us
Janelle
once
Monáe,
again.
Who gave a nice introduction.
Janelle Monáe, well,
great,
again, which
yeah,
we
great
did,
introduction.
Did not know was coming, but it was great, yeah. But even the week before the awards, I was struck, and we did a story about this, about how there didn't seem to be a Me Too moment coalescing around the awards the way that they were around all the other awards. We went to a lot of women artists and executives in the industry, and I was greatly dismayed that none of them wanted to say anything about it, particularly ones that like to go to the Billboard Women in Music Awards and, you know, act like this is an important issue for them. It just seems like this would be the moment to speak up.
What do you think some of the the reasoning behind that was? Do you think one of the things that came up in the article that Joe and Ben reported was, you know, music is not unionized in a way that is similar to Hollywood. So repercussions can probably be doled out in ways that are that can affect your bottom line, basically, and your ability to speak out much more directly. What do you think that what do you think is really happening?
I mean, I think that's part of it. Yeah. I think a lot of women in the industry are scared because somebody, you're kind of probably 2 degrees of separation, not even six, from somebody who has committed, you know, some sort of crime. Mm-hmm. In the music industry, it's like deeply embedded into everything. I think the stats in that report that we were citing earlier really says a lot. It was like 2% of women producers produce songs in the last 6 years or something like
making
that.
Onto
yeah, the and 14% of yeah. songwriters. So the opportunities aren't there. So are you going to be the woman who starts complaining? Nobody's going to work with you.
But I also think that when we were reporting this, we got a lot of pushback. You know, from everybody, from the people who represent the artists and the executives. And one of the things I got from the industry side a lot was, don't draw too close a parallel between Hollywood and what happens in the music industry. You know, careers are different. The structure of the business is different. People are signed to contracts in a different way than they're hired to do films. All that is true. But I feel like it's splitting hairs. And while that might be an explanation for why a response is different, I don't feel like it's that it's an explanation for why there is not a response.
I mean, the media industry does not work the same way as Hollywood.
Right.
There's no,
or
you
politics.
Know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Another answer we got a lot was that there was no sort of chief villain in the music yeah. industry to sort of center this on, no Harvey Weinstein-like figure or even, you know, Kevin Spacey, a Matt Lauer. Someone that
which is true,
which is true, but there has
at
been
least not yet.
Decades of
not
reporting
yet.
On you know an artist like R. Kelly,
Russell there, Simmons,
yeah, Russell Simmons, who you know is a little bit out of the game, but who we did an investigation on his past treatment of women. So you know there are examples that could have been used to rally people that have not been, and I think it is telling that they continue to use Kesha as the sort of proxy for this, even though she hasn't been saved from the way that this industry works.
What did end up happening at the show, Ben, as you and Joe reported, was a group of around a dozen mid-level music industry professionals a couple of days before the Grammys realized that nothing was happening and there wasn't going to be a Me Too movement. So they started a White Rose movement, not to be confused with the Mr. Robot character. But,
or the seltzer.
Yeah, there was a lot of potential Google, you know, misfires to happen here. But a lot of people did wear a white rose on the red carpet, and Ryan Seacrest was forced to ask people about it. And I believe Julianna Rancic had like a white rose attached to her microphone.
Was it attached or was she gripping?
I don't know, but she was like poking it at there, people yeah. while she was questioning them. It was a super strange
yeah,
dynamic.
It was strange watching yeah. people hold. I felt like there was a lot of like, holding a clutch
yep.
and holding a rose next to your clutch. There was a little
maybe
bit
it was
of that.
A rose you could borrow before you went on camera so you didn't seem like
I mean, the
everybody's
person.
Holding
the same
yeah.
rose.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's possible.
But you know what? I really give him credit that,
yeah.
you know, it's
it
true
very
that
fast.
The messaging yeah. wasn't really clear and it happened at the last minute, but
they got it
you
done.
Know, a group of women in the music industry who are not the highest ranking leaders out there, these are kind of like mid-level executives and professionals, like just days before, like got together at a Mexican restaurant and said, like, let's do something.
And they ended up, they got a Twitter emoji. They got a 1-800-Flowers sponsorship. Like they,
it had a presence. It yeah. was, you know, the White Rose was on Elton's piano. It was around throughout the night, but I don't know that it really
didn't
moved
add
the
up
needle
to. A, I feel like it didn't necessarily shift the conversation. Ben's got to leave, so thanks, Ben, for joining us. We're gonna stick around and we're gonna say great things about your hair in your absence.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Please do.
I will.
Get some sleep, Ben. You deserve it.
Okay.
Yeah, seriously, we all do.
Now would you know my name if I saw you? Now would it be the same if I saw you? I must be strong and carry on, 'cause I know I don't belong here in heaven.
Okay, so maybe let's run through a few moments that we enjoyed and maybe a few moments we struggled with last night. So what you just heard is the Eric Church portion of a country music tribute to the victims of the Las Vegas Country Music Festival shooting. And this is sort of the type of thing that the Grammys likes to do. They like people to cover old rock songs. They like country musicians to cover old rock songs. That's one thing they like. They like to pay tribute. That's another thing they like. And they like to put people out of their comfort zone. This is another thing they like. Did not add up successfully in this particular case. So joining Eric Church in this performance were Brothers Osborne and Maren Morris. And Eric Church came third. And I thought he was the only genuinely listenable one of the three. The Brothers Osborne part of it was extremely challenging. It was not the way to kick off a tribute. I think if you had Eric Church out there on his own doing the whole thing, which he certainly is capable of doing, he also had a pretty moving song that came out called Why Not Me, which he recorded in the immediate aftermath of that event. You know, Eric Church is a guy with a fair amount of gravitas and also kind of a sometimes tough attitude. And I think you'd have been right, but I found that particular moment to be challenging.
And it's disappointing because it's like should have been a gimme for the Grammys. This is
the kind of thing that could be great TV.
Yeah, it's such an emotionally charged moment and it just didn't land. And I feel like we saw that a couple times.
I think that's part of what we were talking about, kind of like the invisible hand guiding perhaps the nominating process. There's obviously one also shaping the show, and there's this like desire to create moments. Like, is this a Grammy moment? You know, we have to do something crazy. We have to put these artists together. They have to cover something. It's like, what if they just sang a good song?
You know what a Grammy moment would be? It's Lil Uzi Vert doing EXO tour life on the Grammys. That'd be a
Grammy moment.
We're
talking about
moment.
Country now. Yeah, oh, you
sorry.
Can't go back.
Sorry, I just had to say.
Well, let me just say that I'm excited for when Maren Morris and Zedd do their song next year at the Grammys.
Spotify, we did see this song on a Target
Spotify
commercial.
I mean, but I think I've been joking.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it's a commercial for Target. Yeah.
We've been joking about this. You know, they basically debuted this single with a commercial that played many times and then for a long time at the end. But I do think it's like notable that one of the biggest music moments of the Grammys, like this song shot up the iTunes charts. This is a commercial. This is not part of the show.
It's reminded me a little bit of the Lil Yachty, Carly Rae Jepsen, Target.
Old Navy, yeah. I think. Oh, is it Target?
Yeah, I think so. But that one didn't result in a hit single.
It didn't. Although I thought it could have. There was a moment where it could have. But this Zedd Maren Morris thing is like extreme Spotify core. Like it's like definitely New Music Fridays, like all day long.
Totally.
So
But the fact that Grammy moments are being created in time in between when the Grammys are on TV is just not a great
SZA
time.
On those, I think it were MasterCard commercials. Yep. I thought she was like more indelible in those commercials than her performance, which I thought was good, but like if you ask me what I remembered from last night, I remember her in that wild camouflage coat, like curled up, singing in those commercials over and over again.
Should we listen to a little of that Zedd Maren Morris song?
Apparently, yes.
It's good. I think we should.
Okay.
Take a seat right over there. Sat on the stairs, stay or leave. The cabinets are bare and I'm unaware of just how we got into this mess. Got so aggressive. I know we meant all good intentions. So pull me closer. Why don't you pull me close? Why don't you come on over? I can't just let you go. Oh, baby. Why don't you just meet me in the middle? I'm losing my mind just a little. Kitchen floors are wet and taps are still running, dishes are broken. How did we get into this mess? Got so aggressive. I know we meant all good intentions. So pull me closer.
I guess coming off of that song, what I should say is that Maren, please make an R&B album, not a Spotify core album.
We'll see what happens. I have another gripe, which is about the Grammys, which is the New York theme. I'm happy that the Grammys are in New York this year. Seems cool. Madison Square Garden.
Less airfare.
Greatest arena on earth. You know, but they just tried to shoehorn this theme into the show. You know, they had two Broadway performances.
Lots of Billy Joel, New York State of Mind, interstitial, yeah, which is fine with me, but I hear you.
Some awkward quoting of Empire State of Mind by
James Corden.
I just don't
retire.
I just don't get the impression that anyone watching the show cares where it's being held, and I didn't feel like any of that was necessary. I don't know.
If you're a podcast listener who lives somewhere between Los Angeles and New York, and you actually care where the Grammys are held, please email us at podcast.
Let us know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah,
if they had taken the opportunity to film interesting, you know, pre-taped segments of like somebody performing somewhere in New York that was special with a special person, I could see.
You mean like Bono performing in the middle of the?
Okay, I forgot about river? That.
Which river did
I
he walk, perform?
I swam right into that.
Barge?
He was on the
East
River.
Is that barge still sailing?
That's my
Can
mistake.
We send that barge to international waters?
JP, did you like the U2 performance?
I liked the
Was
intentions.
It a Grammy moment?
It wasn't enough of a Grammy moment for me. I thought it was. You could see all of the earnest intentions in it. Yeah, it was in front of the Statue of Liberty. Camila Cabello recited Emma Lazarus. It should have been better. I thought it was kind of a near miss.
Yeah. I thought Camila Cabello
I wanted it to be better because at least they were trying to do something. They were trying. I mean, U2 has been good at these. U2 Super Bowl performance after September 11th was, you know, everybody was crying.
Yeah.
This one, they couldn't quite pull it off.
Yeah.
But it's the Grammys. They're always a little skewed. After the show, I went back and watched U2 and Mary J. Blige.
Oh yeah,
doing one.
Oh, wow. I remember that.
That was jaw dropping.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll give them a slight pass on this because they've done it before.
Well, should we just listen to that instead of listening to the YouTube performance?
I have a related excellent Grammy moment. I think it was 2010. It was Elton John, but with Lady Gaga. Do you remember this?
Yes.
Instead of Miley Cyrus,
It was like, and it was
Kindred Spirits.
Yeah, but it was a colorful, full-on choreography, dueling pianos, crazy glasses, everyone screaming kind of performance. Definitely in contrast to what Miley and Elton gave us, which was beautifully sung, but like a little bit of a drowsy Grammy moment.
Didn't need to be there.
It didn't.
It was just a commercial for an upcoming CBS special with Elton John.
That's
okay,
right.
And let us quote that great musicologist Bruno Mars, who upon accepting his Album of the Year award, wanted his song played longer, and he said, too many ballads.
Too many
Hello,
ballads
Grammys.
Tonight.
It was a ballad-heavy heavy night.
Instead of listening to U2, can we listen to a little
John,
bit?
John, you're so cruel.
Instead of listening to U2, can we listen to the Camila Cabello speech?
Only if we can post a photo of her reading glasses.
Yeah.
Which she put on after the performance.
Yes.
But they were like distance reading glasses. It was very cute.
So let's listen to a little of Camila Cabello's speech.
I'm here on this stage tonight because, just like the Dreamers, my parents brought me to this country with nothing in their pockets but hope. They showed me what it means to work twice as hard and never give up. And honestly, no part of my journey is any different from theirs. I'm a proud Cuban-Mexican immigrant born in Eastern Havana, standing in front of you on the Grammy stage in New York City. Thank you. And all I know is just like Dreams, these kids can't be forgotten and are worth fighting for.
A thing that we all spoke about a little bit last night, sort of offline, was were the Grammys political this year? That's a thing that came up. And I would have said by and large no, except for a few key moments, most of which happened sort of in like the last third of the show. I think the Camila Cabello speech, perhaps Logic's speech, which I know is not super well received by everybody sitting at the table, although I kind of enjoyed it.
You know,
his intentions were good too.
Yeah, good intentions. He does a version of that speech every night.
Yes, probably in the bathroom mirror.
We saw
probably
it at
like
the
at
VMAs.
Home with his wife. Like he's just like just chatting.
No, it's part
about
of the
dinner.
Song.
It's part of the song. And
can you relate?
But he, you know, referenced President Trump's comment about whole countries.
Yeah,
and
he said
you know,
you're not a. Oh, you're beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Are we have to bleep this whole podcast?
We bleeped last week. Okay. We'll keep bleeping. It's fine. But I was encouraged that the youngest generation, like, and actually I thought artists with maybe something to lose as far as, you know, Camila Cabello probably is not, I don't think Fifth Harmony was ever on the Grammys. Like, I think it's certainly her first time as a solo artist. Logic, first time on the Grammys. Like, these are people who took the platform and took it seriously and tried to do something with it. And none of them are, like, super established figures.
I appreciate your earnestness on this point.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't think that they did anything particularly edgy,
I'm
to
aging.
Be honest.
I didn't say it was edgy. I just said it was nice to see.
But also, there is that Hollywood liberal thing where you put the spokesman on your program and then do nothing about the underlying situation.
Right. True.
And then we had Cardi B reading from Fire and Fury, which that we should
a
play.
A mood.
Can we please play that?
Yeah. Yeah. Mood.
If Trump was not having his 6:30 dinner with Steve Bannon, then more to his liking, he was in bed by that time with a cheeseburger. Why am I even reading this? I can't believe this. I can't believe that he really, this is how he lives his life.
What can you say after that?
That was the moment of the night.
To be fair, that's also kind of how I live my life sometimes. But you know,
cheeseburgers in bed.
Yeah. Well, no cheese, but
who
still.
Who lives like that?
You eat burgers with no cheese?
Yeah,
of
course.
I didn't even know this about you.
Oh, my God. No, no cheese.
But can I say something about the Grammys and comedy? Please stop. That's what I want to say.
Yeah.
Comedy... the so-called
no
comedy.
You mean the sketches?
Yeah, the sketches. It's like, I'm sorry, James Corden, you're not funny. Just like, give it up.
So just to emphasize how much I don't need to hear Sting and Shaggy be in the same thing, let's listen to a little bit of the Subway karaoke James Corden, Sting, and Shaggy sketch, which starts with singing and ends with a punch to James Corden's
face.
You
are being so cruel.
Yes, that's true. No, I apologize to my listeners.
We're going to lose more.
Please stick with us. Down 24%. Go get a drink of water and come back in 30 seconds.
Should we listen to some music?
Let's go. Come on.
Every breath you take and every move you make.
Yeah.
Every bond you break. Every step
you take, I'll be watching. Knock it off. No, we're just trying to...
annoying everyone on the train?
No, we're doing like a carpool karaoke, but like a New York special edition.
I don't give a... Shut up.
He's quite a scary man. He's quite a scary
Maybe
man.
Maybe it's just him.
Also, the decision to give the Best Comedy Award as one of the 9 televised awards at music's biggest night.
Yeah,
is
you're offending. There's
baffling.
A lot of people.
Well, baffling.
Can I just, I feel slightly differently about that because it is the Recording Academy, and technically it's a form of recording.
Well, however, you need a microphone.
No, yes, but well, where's the best podcast? Where are we getting that next year? What's up? We're recording.
Well, actually, Pedro's remixing as we do this.
Pedro, you going to submit us? Don't forget to submit us. But someone said, and I don't want to, someone at this table may know the facts on this, that none of the best comedy nominees were actually released as standalone albums. They are all Netflix specials.
So Netflix did some dirty deal.
That's what I think this is really
is
about.
Well, Chappelle and Seinfeld definitely were.
I don't know anything about this.
I think the Gaffigan one.
We got to ask Zinnemann about this.
Okay. Well, we'll figure that out. Maybe we'll tweet that.
You didn't enjoy the sight of Jerry Seinfeld cuddling with a puppy?
I mean, I'm happy for all those guys. I'm glad Chappelle was a part of the show. But yeah. I just think, and you know, there are some people who think that the Grammys could be improved by giving away a few more awards and having a few less of these endless ballad performances. And, you know, I'm open to trying that. At least you would get different people on stage, you know. And I think also what people don't know is, you know, there are 84 awards. The diversity of the awards, both in gender and race, it's not as bad as it may have looked on screen. I haven't crunched all the numbers.
It's close to as bad.
I know, but you could, but if you showed a few more awards, you would at least have a different mix of faces.
So, Joe, to your point, I was really happy to see the Despacito performance last night. I thought it was like maybe a little too polished for what the song is. I think the song, despite how popular and like bright it is, it's actually kind of there's some grit to it. But I was really happy to see people singing in Spanish on the regular Grammys, not the Latin Grammys. Obviously, your man Justin Bieber did not show, but that just meant I got to tweet out an article about his Spanish coach. So, like, so cool.
I mean, to be honest, that should have won Record of the Year. Yeah. Like, yeah. I don't see the universe in which 24 Karat Magic is
more impactful.
The Record of the Year.
Yeah, 100% agree.
And I was surprised that Bruno won for song as well. That's what I like. I think is probably my favorite of those Bruno songs, and especially of the singles. But for a songwriter award, I didn't see it.
I mean, the Grammys like real guys playing real instruments. That's a hot funk band, Bruno Mars leads, so you can see the prejudice.
You don't think
prejudice.
People playing real instruments on Despacito?
Yeah, a real laptop. A real laptop. But the thing about that Despacito performance, it was so strange, though, was like it, all of a sudden. To me, I mean, I watch the Latin Grammys every year. To me, you were just transported to the Latin Grammys. You had the girls, you had the weird lighting. Yeah. You had it was just like, okay.
Here's, all of a sudden, it's fluorescent on yeah. the stage.
I was happy to see it. It felt like
it would have been a great. I mean, you know, they care about immigration at the Grammys. Mm-hmm. Make Despacito Song of the Year. Do something that's a milestone.
Right.
Don't give it to an imitation of a 90s funk song that's pretty good.
Definitely saw at least one person on my timeline last night being like, now I'm finally hearing Despacito for the first time. So you're canceled.
I think Corden
was
that joke
James
too.
Corden's joke? Yeah.
Okay. No, I don't think this, this person is joking.
You're all canceled.
I also enjoyed the DJ Khaled and Rihanna performance.
So did Karen.
I did too.
Yeah. Let's talk about
we
that.
We put it in our bests.
It was one of the bests.
Yeah.
So, I first of all, just before we get to the Rihanna part, let's get talking about the DJ Khaled part.
Oh, okay. I don't want to talk about him.
I just want to talk about him very briefly.
Okay.
So, you know, we've now endured like several years of narrative about DJ Khaled, about what is it he does or what is it he doesn't do, his Snapchat, his baby, all this stuff. Despite all of that, I did not for one second not enjoy watching him on the Grammys. Just motivating people.
I agree. It was fun. And it was mercifully short. It was 15 seconds, right?
That's about the right amount.
Yeah. Right. And then it all just gives way to Rihanna and also the often overlooked Bryson Tiller. Who I actually wrote my entire first draft of my piece. And I had to text Karen like about 10 minutes before it went live. Be like, oh, right. Also Bryson Tiller.
No.
I thought he sounded great, though. I like Bryson Tiller.
I like Bryson Tiller a lot. I just, in that context, he is
by far the least. Well, he was pretty gobbled up by that.
Rihanna is his son. Bryson Tiller is Pluto.
Yes.
Neither of those men mattered in that performance.
I thought
that was an excellent Rihanna performance. I think that she had earned a little bit of a reputation over the years of being like a lazy live performer.
And she's totally undone.
And I think in the past few years, she has worked so hard. The Anti-Tour was one of the best tours I've seen in a long time. Big Pop Tour.
Was very good.
It was technically interesting. I think it was sponsored by Samsung. If it wasn't Samsung, it was a similar company. And it was like interesting to look at. She was killing it the entire time. She was like catwalks, strutting, really doing the choreography. And I was struck by how much choreography she was executing while very clearly singing live. Yeah, I just thought that was one of her, it was a great moment.
Just the last few years of Rihanna award show performances alone, you have her sort of VMAs thing where she did four performances throughout the show. Most of them were amazing. You have that Love on the Brain performance, I believe, at the Billboard Awards, which in where she's wearing the crazy green, which is stunning. And then this one was just like, you know, it was light work for her, but she brought some joy that I think the rest of the show was lacking.
She was really grinding out that choreography at the end. The internet was quite delighted. It was a South African dance. I don't want to mispronounce. Guara Guara, I believe. Mm-hmm. But as I pointed out in the thing I wrote, it was like a night where none of the pop stars wanted to be pop stars. You know, like they all sat down.
Or Pink just
Yeah, Pink
stood
or
there.
Or stood.
Yeah. Yes. Should we go out with some of that Rihanna performance?
I would be pleased.
Okay, so this is Rihanna and maybe or maybe not some of DJ Khaled. I'll leave it in paper.
Perhaps
hands.
Some Bryson Tiller.
Yeah, and also Bryson Tiller again with Wild Thoughts from last night. No, there's cookies for the bacon. Kitty, kitty, baby, get our things on rest. Cause you done beat it like the 68 Jets. Diamonds are nothing when I'm shining with you. Diamonds are nothing when I'm shining with you. Keep it white and black as if I'm your sister. I'm too hip to hop around town. Grammys, send it! That is our show this week. Thank you for continuing to support the New York Times, which continues to support us watching the Grammys, although there is no aftercare for that. It's just something we have to do and then work through. Thank you to my guests, John Perales, Ben Cesario, the ghost of Ben Cesario and his hair, Joe Coscarelli, and Karen Gans. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. You can email us if anybody has any hot Grammy takes. I actually would love any take that's not already been taken. When we saw Brent Staples earlier and he came through with the "this isn't even cool for white people" take, I'm into that. If you got a take that's that fuego, please email it to us at podcast@nytimes.com. You can subscribe to the podcast, which you absolutely should do, at Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, iHeartRadio, anywhere you get your audio content. Please write us in for best podcast at the 2019 Grammys. We're coming for you, Portnow and Ehrlich. Please televise our category next year. Drop a pin. Our producer is Pedro Rosado of Headstepper Media. Bro. See why you got it on. Yeah. Hey, why go and sit on brown liquor? Hey, I probably shouldn't be around you. You get wild. You looking like it's nothing that you won't do. Hey, girl, that's when I told you. What? When I'm with you, all I get is wild thoughts. Wow, wow, wow. Wow, wow.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.